Session number 23187, Reel 4.
Mr. Ashcombe, Reel 4. We're talking about your time based in the at Banville and nearby airstrips, but mainly on the air evacuation of the wounded strip.
Yeah.
So what was the next thing you remember? You were talking about the transport problem. You didn't have any.
No, we always had to rely on our friends from Number One STC, and then suddenly, after the breakout from the Falaise Gap, we were all gathered together in one long convoy, and we had some transport, but it was always personnel moving. We had none of our own wherever we were based, so they used to come along and help out, and we had this long convoy out of Normandy. I saw the Basilica somewhere on the road down there, and we also saw this obelisk in a field while we were passing through. It was a little way away, and we all thought we'd like to go and have a look at it, and it was the site of the RAR 101 crash. So that sort of tied up with Cardington. But, of course, they were still, all the local villagers were still throwing in fruit and flowers even when we went through.
What do you remember of the reception? What kind of, tell me a bit more about the reception you got.
Well, we were moving, basically, all the time, so it was just a case of fruit and flowers, you know. And if we had to go under a bridge, somebody would always shout out, duck, because this was open, you know. I remarked on the guy that worked in Cookhouse, his name I've just remembered is Buck Pelosi, and he kept a field kitchen all stoked up and going, so there was this nice little chimney with smoke coming out, so that whenever we stopped, we had a hot cup of tea. And of course, petrol for the civilians was so severely rationed that it became a case of they were offering their wives for petrol. And I'd seen the offers happen. You know, what happened ultimately, I don't know. But so that is definitely part of folklore that is the truth. And we finally got on up to Lille, where we had a job getting through the streets. They were ram-jam full, and one of our chaps, I think like me, he was aircraft hand general duties, his name was Geoffrey Quigley, who later became quite famous but he did a lot of work on TV as Godfrey Quigley. He slid off the wagon, and we didn't see him again till the following morning. We moved on to an airstrip, and it happened to be a Polish airstrip, and we went into the canteen for food, and it was dreadful. You've asked me about food. Well, this is the first time I've really thought, oh my goodness me.
You know, because it was Polish style?
Slop. Purely a four-letter word, slop. And then we went on the move again.
Now, at this Polish airfield, were you doing anything?
No, it was a staging post. And our first, we moved on into Belgium. And we were actually, it was on a permanent station. So we were actually in army billets, and by which time I was seeing one or two others, because there was more than just my flight up there, and we found that was at Wevelgem, which was just outside Courtrai, and we found there was a little Red Cross centre in the town of Menin, and we could go in there. They didn't have much, but to have nice mashed potatoes and cooked tomatoes was brilliant. You know, that was all lovely down there. And then because it was a permanent station, they decided that we would have bed layouts every morning, which doesn't go down well with a work squadron. So we said, right, you either have work or bullshine. And so we didn't have to do any bed layouts.
Now, I'm still a little... What were you actually doing at Menin? You know, what work were you doing? You
not
were
a lot.
Outfit, but
not a lot. I don't really remember doing anything there. Might have done a bit of sweeping up. It wasn't until later on that I found that I was doing other funny things. Oh, a little bit I missed out. While we were still in Normandy, I got called over to two fields away. And they said, oh, you want to remuster to instrument repairer? So I said, well, that was the idea. So they said, well, obviously now you're out here, you can't go on a course for instrument repairing, but how would you like to be a plant operator? I said, no, I don't want to be a plant operator. And I thought, well, I've been plonked in there. If I get an airfield construction trade, I'll never get out of the place. And... So they said, well, you can't be a GD in works flight. I said, why not? They said, well, it's not a works flight trade. They said, you can be a groundsman or an ACH works hand. I said, I don't want to know. I'll hang on till I can get my course as an instrument repairer. So I managed to remain as an aircraft hand general duties. So I never got put into anything in particular. They'll say, I really don't remember what we did there. I did at one time, there was a badly shot up, I think it was a hurricane, came down. Certainly wasn't a typhoon that I mentioned earlier. And he pancaked on the airstrip amongst a big cloud of smoke and did a complete 180. But they got him out all right. That was a happening for us, you know. Of course, the usual bit, everybody runs off the station, runs to see if they can give a hand. And the other thing that stands out in my memory there, we saw all the Market Garden survivors coming back, you know, with their bits of yellow marker parachutes and things like that. And I had a couple of bits for years afterwards, but you cleared these things out.
So how long were you there for, at Menin airstrip? Roughly.
Could be about 3 weeks or so, I don't know.
Into September then?
Yeah, I could, because it was all, squadron records were all very vague at that time.
So what was your next move?
Well, they decided in their wisdom to pull us back, you know. So we had the long journey back to Amiens, and I don't remember much at all about that journey. In fact, it's only when I checked up with squadron records at the records office that I've had a few gentle reminders. But, and I don't exactly remember where we went into our billets. But suffice it to say, we were actually at Amiens-Glissy, I think it was. But we were some couple of 3 miles back in these billets. I remember where the other village that had a lot, I could check up on it. It's funny, I don't remember the name of that village where I was, and I remember the name of the village up there. And basically, Amiens, of course, was no man's land during World War One, and we'd often find old spanners with the old arrow and 1917 or something on it. So once again, we had to rely on transport. And the way we did it, by this time, because we were on a larger airfield and more work being done, we had more tippers, you know, to load up and tip the stuff off.
Now, what actual work was going on? Were you part of it? Or because I know you changed to being a clerk soon, but around about this time. Were you actually involved in airfield construction at any time?
Basically, not. Like, our squadron had a very, very easy passage through the war because of shortage of transport. I had a very easy passage because I wasn't a works flight trade. So
what happened next then?
Well, they fixed us up there, and we had to come through a village called Villers-Bretonneux, which really was no man's land in those times, and we used to have to come down every morning. We had a mess up in the village, so we could have breakfast before we came down. And I was, I think, what I one of the little jobs I was doing, I had the old block and tackle, and we were pulling up corrugated iron sheets to repair the roof. The steel erectors were up there doing the roof, and I was just doing the odd job bit with the block and tackle. Well, it was a bit of a repair place. We used to have the odd mosquito come in that needed more attention than R&R in the field. And so, funnily enough, they only parked a Mozzie right under the hole in the roof. So I start swinging up this bit of corrugated iron, and I went straight through the tip of a Mozzie. And old Chiefy came up. It wasn't our, you know, it wasn't one of my flight sergeants. It was the, you know, whatever, he was on servicing planes. And he said, "You're in trouble now." I said, "Well, quite frankly, we're repairing the roof, you know. Where are we going to find somebody to move the Mozzie?" So he says, "Hang on." He went down into the stores. He said, "You're in luck. We've got a spare wingtip." So I never heard another thing about it. And that was the first place we first saw the Malcolm Club T-bars, you know, mobile Malcolm Club.
What was that? Tell me. I'm not familiar with them.
Well, you know, you had coffee stalls or, you know, vans that would do tea and cakes. The Malcolm Club was an RAF institution, as against the NAFI. Although the NAFI was all services, the Malcolm Club was strictly that. All the nice ladies that wanted to do something, you know, they were very nice too. And yeah, that was the first time I...
What were these mobile tea bars like then? What could you get there? Was it just tea?
Tea, cakes, probably sandwiches. I don't remember to that extent, you know. Suffice it to say, I remember they were always welcome. And whether this flight sergeant had complained to the flight sergeant, old Johnny Gowland, on works flight, but suddenly the word went out, we need, one of the other flights needs a flight clerk. So I thought, well, here is a time, I will ignore the old phrase, never volunteer for nothing, because I'd been bank trained, you know, and a bit in stockbrokers. So I volunteered for it, and without further ado, I got the job, which meant that I had a nice little cosy box in a hangar, And
this was with 5541 flight.
That's right. That was when I was transferred by number. But we were all working together. But 5541 flight were at Morel, the other village. And
you were at Villers-Bretonneux.
No. Sorry. Villers-Bretonneux was halfway between my village and Emil Glissy. I could sort out the name quite.
It's okay.
Yeah. And
So what were your duties? What did you actually do?
I didn't do a lot, actually. The main thing that I remember was making out a list of all the flight who wanted to send home postal orders. And, of course, being ever mindful, and I'd never drunk a lot in those days, and I'm not teetotal now, but after a spell of migraine, I gave it up, and I didn't want to get the taste again. So if any of the lads didn't want postal orders, and I had a bit of spare cash, I used to put it down against their name. And I would go down into Amiens in the truck and pick up the postal orders and give them out. I probably had other usual duties about...
Now, so you'd order postal orders for people?
Yeah.
You could only get a limited number for each person, could you?
Well, I think we were allowed £2 a fortnight, something like that. Once again, my memory...
You wanted more than that?
So. Well, if I had more cash to spend... And I had the chance of sending them home.
And you'd send them home to who? To your mother? Or
yeah.
And she would put them in an account for them or use them for the family?
No. There was no married allowance or anything, you know, being a single boy.
So she just put it in an account for you?
Probably, yeah. Post office or something like that.
So what else was going on? Your other duties?
That was it. I was flight clerk. I didn't do any more duties whatsoever.
You must have done more than postal orders, though, surely. I mean,
it was a funny unit, and I was a funny trade. And I really don't remember. We used to go down to into Amiens periodically. We'd get a truck and go down there. And come back, and I mentioned Geoffrey Quigley early on, that became Godfrey Quigley, and he ran a raffle one Christmas, and we were in the same room together, and miraculously I won a bottle of gin on this, but it was also. They were two Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. They both really stand out in my mind.
Tell me about them then.
Well, if you were on guard Christmas Eve, you weren't on guard New Year's Eve. So I was on guard New Year's Eve. A week before Christmas, I happened to meet a chap that... I hadn't seen since my last day at school. I think I made a quick reference to it early on. I hadn't seen him before that time. And so that was very nice to see him. Don Redman was his name, and I remember the name. And he said, well, look, I've been invited to a French family for Christmas. And if you'd like to come... they're quite happy to have you. And he warned me they were having lamb, I think it was, and they shove all these little garlic cloves all around the land. So he said, if you don't like garlic, be careful. So I did my stint on guard. Don't remember much about that. But there was no transport into Amiens the following morning. So we walked along the tracks, didn't we? The railway tracks. So we got into Amiens, and I had a very nice elongated Christmas lunch. What happened after that, And how I got back, whether I thumbed a lift or something, I don't really remember. And then we had New Year's Eve, and we all went into Albert, which was once again a very nice little village, and there were what seemed to be Frenchmen with their old denims or whatever leaning against the bar. When you got talking to them, they had broad Yorkshire accents and things like that. They were all deserters from the First World War, stayed over there, and then they lived through another look. Anyway, I got talking to the daughter of the local doctor. He was in the square. And she invited us all over. I don't know whether it was when it closed, or she invited us all over for drinks in the doctor's house. I didn't meet the doctor. So we were singing the French songs and drinking the French tipple, and we had a lovely night. And funnily enough, I kept in correspondence with her even after the war, occasionally, and she said she was going to Vietnam as a nurse, and I didn't hear from her anymore. So she probably got killed. But a funny little thing about church services out there, we'd have our church service in our mess, and I always remember from square bashing days, the Sky Pilot had come on, and he'd say, or somebody would say, "Fall out the Roman Catholics and Jews." So I, like a good Protestant, would stay on parade. But once we were out there, that meant going in for a service in the marquee. So when it was "fall out the Roman Catholics and Jews," I suddenly changed my religion so I could have a smoke, you know. And that's one of the things. And out there, we had, in the village, was a lady hairdresser who'd had an illegitimate son. Not that that's anything against it. We don't know who. It was a lovely little boy he was. And she was the village hairdresser. So we had,
So you were talking about this hairdresser. And yeah. You remember the name of the village. It's Marcel Cave.
That's right.
Marcel Cave. Or
Marcel Cave.
So what about this hairdresser then?
Well, she was just the hairdresser in the village, and it saved waiting for Spin to come round. Now, Spin was the squadron hairdresser, and he got the name Spin because he used to spin through them all. But of course, when you're sort of in the field like that, they don't worry too much about get your hair cut and am I hurting you and all the other famous phrases. So we all used to go down there. It's a pleasant change from seeing all the fellas, you know. And
now, had you started your unit band? Or
that no, time? That's a long way down the line.
So what happened next then?
Well, for the one of the dances before Christmas was being held at Morell, which was the, shall we say, the home base of my current flight, 5541, although I was still in Marcel Cave, having billeting and catering with 4768. Well, we, as I said all along, we had no transport. So because of the, they were going to run a dance, they decided to send a 3-ton truck over for us. But there was trouble with the motor, trouble with the petrol pump. So how they got to us and how they got us over there is, of course, health and safety things went out the window. There they were with this big jerry can pouring petrol into the carburettor. And they got us there, and then they fixed the petrol pump once we got there. So that was a... You see, all my remembrances are quite pleasant, and I don't remember much about the work. A, we didn't have transport. B, I wasn't in a proper,
Now, what else happened? So what happened as you sort of, well, you went into 1945?
Well,
did you stay at Marcel Kahr?
Yes, we did for quite a while, and it was the coldest winter on record out there. And as I said earlier, we were taken in tipper trucks, but to keep us out of the weather, they used square mesh track to build a canopy, and then they wrapped roofing felt around that. And as my officer said, he said, I'm surprised I wasn't court martialed for misappropriating Air Force stores. That was later, he told me that. So they used to drive us in, and one of these days there'd been rather a quick thaw. There was snow everywhere. A quick thaw, and then a quick freeze again. So we had sort of a quarter of an inch of ice on the windscreen, and we didn't know such things as scrapers or anything in those days. So the chap I used to travel with usually had a Dodge truck, which of course, so he would open the sides of the engine, you know, so the hot air could blow on the windscreen, because they didn't have heats in the car anyway. So he clears that nicely, and we start to go back to Marcel Kahr, and we find there's been a bit of an accident up the road, nothing serious. Well, he wasn't going to let an accident hold him up. So he did a quick right turn, snow everywhere, you know, he didn't know what was going to meet us, into the field, bypass the accident, and back we came to the billet. But while I was in Amiens, I managed to get a photograph of the billet we were in, which was well shell-shocked. But, of course, that referred to World War One. They'd since rebuilt it, and it was quite all right by that time.
So how long were you there for?
I think it was about the February or March time before they decided we would have to up sticks and move on from there. And, of course, that time, because it was a full sort of squadron move, I was then put onto my new flight with new NCOs, and but of course that all becomes another story.